Welcome to another episode of Thoughts for a More Sustainable World. First, let's do some introductions. I'm Jens.
I'm Andrea.
I'm Eleftheria.
And I'm Long.
And we are going to be the hosts of today's episode. Today, we will dive into SDG 11, a goal that aims to make cities and human settlements inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable. Today, 56% of the world's population lives in cities. And as urbanization increases, so will this percentage. Cities face a lot of challenges such as providing affordable and safe housing, good infrastructure for public transport, homelessness, water and air pollution, waste, and many more. In this podcast, we will mainly be focusing on the social pillar of sustainability rather than the environmental. The social aspect of sustainability is about human rights, fair labor practices, access to resources, equity, gender equality, living conditions, and more. Firstly, we will look into the birth of the entity of the city. Later on, we will dive into two examples of cities that are thriving and two examples of cities that are underperforming when it comes to sustainability. We will thematically link these cities with different projects that provide solutions to four contemporary urban challenges: resiliency, affordability, inclusivity, and sustainability. Without further ado, let's dive into today's topic.
Why do our cities look the way they do? Why is there such a phenomenon as an urban problem? How and why do cities change over time? But before we move forward and answer these questions, we should first go back in time, because in order to answer these questions, it helps to understand just how cities were able to emerge in the first place. About 10,000 years ago, in a region called Mesopotamia, now Iraq, the first cities were established. This was made possible as a consequence of what is called the Neolithic Revolution. This agricultural revolution enabled the production of food surpluses, which facilitated the transition from a nomadic to a sedentary lifestyle. However, the massive urbanization boom we are witnessing across the world today is by contrast a relatively recent phenomenon. Until 200 years ago, only less than 10% of the world population lived in cities. The second significant revolution in the history of cities is the Industrial Revolution. The mechanization of production created huge employment opportunities in cities, thus resulting in a pull away from rural areas towards cities. The invention of the skyscraper facilitated an increase in population density in urban centers. Nowadays, more than half of the global population lives in cities, and the urban population continues to grow at a rapid pace, especially in the global south. But the explosive urban growth made possible by industrialization comes with a downside, mainly that cities struggle to provide services to the ever-increasing population, resulting in problems ranging from failure to collect household waste to the rise of vast, unserviced and unchecked slums. Now we move to a first example to learn something about urban inclusivity. Let's go to Slovenia.
You only need to look back about 10 years to find a city that is almost unrecognizable from the viable city of Ljubljana of today. Back then, you had cars filling up the city center, high levels of pollution, long waits of public transport on overcrowded streets. Even going from one side of the river to the other was considered a demanding task. Now, it is a city that will surprise you and exceed your expectations. Many changes happened in a short period of time, and this is one of the reasons why the city managed to become the European Green Capital in 2016. Natural drinking water without additional treatments, green areas covering almost 75% of the city surface, car bans in the city center since 2007, giving back space to pedestrians and cyclists, public fountains operating in the warm months, usually from April to October, making clean water accessible to all. The municipality also provides free public toilets in 10 locations in the city center of Ljubljana, 7 of which are adapted for users with special needs. The mobile app Ljubljana by Wheelchair has been created to provide reliable information on basic needs for those in a wheelchair looking for things like food, drink, sleep, transport, public toilets, and more. Now, let's travel to the happiest country of the world.
So, we visit the traditional capital Pūnaha, where in 1970, the King of Bhutan declared that raw national happiness much more important than gross national product. And lying in the core of gross national happiness, the country constitution stated that every Bhutanese is a trustee of the kingdom's natural resources and environment for the benefit of the present and future generations. We can easily see every house, trees or person in Pūnaha is some degree attached to nature, from architecture to housing applicants. 85% of local people noted that they were elaborately informed and asked for opinion about activities relating to community forests, showing a very high degree of transparency and bottom-line approach. While community belief is highly constructed and maintained via administration activities, community's identity is strengthened by traditional rich culture. Walking across the street in Pūnaha, we can still see black-necked cranes, a spiritual and historical creature flying across the sky. It would not be there without the unity in forest protection efforts. At the same time, all houses, no matter old or newly built, follow the same architecture from hundreds of years ago in every detail of window, door or the roof. They are in harmony with temples and sculpture, with the vibration coming from temple bells and with the light smell of traditional incense in the air. Though Pūnaha and Bhutan are still struggling with the poverty rate and many other developing problems, the people are still proud of their value, high level of community identity and live a well-being, peaceful life, an outer world phenomenon that many other cities have not yet found the answer to. So now, to better understand the key for the success of Pūnaha and Ljubljana, we should go back to some theory foundation.
Contemporary neoliberal cities include all modern metropolitan features and all kinds of state-of-the-art services, but at the same time, inequalities and urgent social problems emerge that are reshaping urban spaces. One of the peaks is affordable, adequate housing. The right to housing is becoming an expensive commodity that the lower income classes in cities increasingly struggle to afford as neoliberal welfare states withdraw from all aspects of urban life. Short-term tenants of private housing, investors, private urban development projects all lead to the gentrification of cities, reinforcing socioeconomic inequalities. This ultimately leads to the social and racial segregation of the city, pushing poor citizens into isolating neighborhoods where conditions of extreme poverty, ghettoization, low living standards are reproduced. Now let's move on to two global north cities, Amsterdam and New Orleans, and see how, contrary to the common beliefs, global north cities also struggle with sustainable development challenges.
At first glance, Amsterdam wouldn't come to mind when thinking of a not-so-sustainable city. Amsterdam is the first city in the world to adopt the donut economic model, which means basic needs are met for a good standard of living while respecting the limits of the planet. The city of Amsterdam is aiming to become a completely emission-free city by 2030 and wants to be fully circular by 2050. However, the main issue Amsterdam is struggling with is lack of affordable housing. The houses are very pricey in Amsterdam due to a few factors. Firstly, due to government regulations. The government raises property taxes, which in turn increase renting prices. Cohabitation is discouraged due to a requirement of a permit when sharing a flat with three or more people. Parents losing social welfare benefits when their children reach a certain age. And retired people losing a third of their pension when moving in together. Secondly, due to tourism and short-term tenants such as Airbnb, many cities around the world, including Amsterdam, cause housing shortages. Because Amsterdam is a popular tourist destination, local people have a hard time finding a roof over their heads. Third, About a fifth of the houses in Amsterdam are bought by investors who are able to manipulate the market so they pay less per property than first-time buyers would. And a fourth issue is due to environmental damages such as the nitrogen crisis. Tighter regulations have been set up, but this delays or bans certain building permits, thus decreasing the speed at which houses are being built. Another issue Amsterdam is facing is homelessness. In 2020, there were about 4,700 homeless people. This has been increasing from year to year. The recent homeless fit the overall profile of a single Dutch man, around 40 years, with a mix of financial debts, addiction, mental and or physical health problems. Now, let's move overseas in the faraway United States and in the city of New Orleans.
New Orleans, nicknamed the Big Easy, is a city known for plenty of good things. The great food, wonderful jazz music, New Orleans' Congo Square is widely considered the birthplace of jazz. And it is one of the most multicultural places in North America. In 2005, the city was engulfed by a disaster of historic proportions. New Orleans, a city surrounded by water, was first and foremost not equipped to withstand a storm as powerful as the hurricane called Katrina, even though it was known at the time that the city was at risk of being hit by such a storm. In addition, the bowl-shaped morphology of the city made it especially vulnerable to flooding, causing 80% of the city to be flooded in a matter of hours. In both short and long term, the government's reaction was characterized by a lack of urgency and responsiveness to the conditions residents had to endure, which led many citizens to feel abandoned and forgotten. The failure of policy both in protecting this vulnerable city ahead of the storm and in its tepid response after the devastation had occurred is evident in the fact that the city's population today, more than 15 years later, is still 20% below its pre-storm level.
We're now moving on to some great initiatives concerning the core challenges that cities face today that can inspire urban policies and cities to take action.
We saw that Ljubljana is a success story in terms of the inclusiveness of its public spaces. Public transport is wheelchair accessible, and the presence of public toilets is making public spaces more inclusive for women. However, the housing markets of many cities remain inaccessible to certain vulnerable groups. The Calico co-housing project in Brussels is trying to address this problem.
So, Andrea, what kind of vulnerable groups are involved in this project?
Difficulties in housing access disproportionately affect vulnerable social classes such as women, elderly people, low-income families, and people with a migrant background. In a city like Brussels, this results in them having to spend over 60% of their income on housing. That is how an affordability problem turns into an inclusivity problem as well. And so, it is these groups that this project is trying to reach.
Interesting. In what way is the Calico project trying to improve the inclusivity of the Brussels housing market?
The project uses an innovative cooperative model, whereby the land on which the apartments of the co-housing project were built is owned by so-called community land trust, allowing it to be managed as a common good. It ensures that the apartments are affordable, now and for future generations. The majority of apartments themselves are rented out at social housing rates. Eleftheria will tell us more about a next project based on a movement that arises all across the world, the Nesson Eco Village.
UN Environment Program estimates that cities are responsible for 75% of global CO2 emissions. In response to that, emerged the phenomenon of eco villages across the world. The project of Nesson Eco Village in Greece presents great interest for its sustainable practices in every aspect of it, across cities that become more and more alienating and polluting.
So, Eleftheria, I want to know in which ways can cities learn from Nesson Eco Village for sustainable practice and values?
One of the main ambitions that Nissan Eco Village prioritize is the entirely natural and handcrafted construction of the houses, like clay, wood and soil. The eco villages of Nissan do not use money for any reason within the community, such as for food, accommodation or energy. They themselves produce their own food and manage to secure any form of energy needed for their activities.
Well, it was impressive, but is it isolated from the outside social bond?
Contrary-wise, they pursue self-sufficiency, not as a driver for isolation or introversion, but as a value that will facilitate the cooperation with other collectivities and partnerships for nutritional goods, specialized local knowledge, and solidarity networks.
Now that we know more about the inclusiveness of Ljubljana and the affordability crisis in Amsterdam, what can we learn from the case of New Orleans?
After natural disaster events such as the storm that hit New Orleans, people easily fall into desperate situation. They lose their houses, which means losing one of the most basic needs of shelters, followed by the loss of safety, loss of relatedness to society, confidences, motivation, and belief in the future. A potential lesson to recover after disaster that I would like to mention is NCL, Flood Resilient House Project, and after 8 years, they have cooperated with both public and private sector to reconstruct almost 1,000 houses that can adapt to annual natural disaster and flooding in Vietnam.
How can they rebuild houses for those people?
By co-creation. Firstly, they create a fundraising campaign by cooperating with artists for art auction and traditional business for festivals. Earnings are then distributed to rebuild not only houses, but also public infrastructures in the ruined areas. Their designs are cheap and easy to do, with the participation of local people in the co-creation process, such as designing subjective space, choosing material, decorating, and so on. Additionally, 50% of the budgets for houses come from the beneficiaries themselves. Thus, people in the project area feel that they are empowered to rebuild their life, satisfying their basic needs and avoiding the shamefulness or ghettoization effects of disadvantaged groups in the communities. In the case of NCL, co-creation in a social innovation has shown its value for post-disaster reconstruction of housing. Last but not least, Jens will tell us some more about the 40 Trees project and how it could benefit cities like Amsterdam that are dealing with housing crisis.
The 40 Trees project is something I've been looking into. It is making houses with cheaper and affordable materials by 3D printing parts of the house. They are most active in Malawi and Kenya. An example, they created 52 homes in a neighborhood in Kilifi County entirely made of those 3D printed parts.
And Jens, how would you link these two examples together, Amsterdam's housing problem and a project of building houses in Africa?
That's a very interesting question. At first glance, they might seem very different projects altogether, but there are some lessons from the 14 Trees project which can be taken. One of the solutions to help Amsterdam alleviate its housing issue is making more homes. By using these cheap and more affordable housing materials, Amsterdam could be able to build more houses and at a faster pace.
Coming to an end of this episode, let's do a quick recap of what was said. We went through a brief history of city as an entity. Then, we talk about the ways in which modern cities are reforming and what are the emerging social sustainability challenges in relation to the rise of affordable housing, inclusion and equity. Later, we navigated to two not-so-known cities for their good sustainable agendas and two cities for their failure to meet social needs. And in the last part, we presented four innovative projects that try to tackle all these social issues by reaching out to the community most in need and inspire the future of sustainability in cities.
We see the cities we're living in changing in front of our eyes, determining our futures and shaping our bodies and minds. It is time to reimagine the patterns of designing our actions in urban spaces. We need to build strong, equitable communities and meet necessities in a sustainable and fair way for us and for the future generations to come.
Now we've reached the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. We hoped you enjoyed it and found it interesting. See you soon.